Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakaba. Welcome to the Strike a Chord Podcast, and on this episode we have the amazing Alex, aka Kundalini Project. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Valentino. Thank you, Amla, for having me. I'm super blessed to be here. Very, very grateful.
It's our pleasure. Now,
yeah,
Kundalini Project.
Kundalini Project.
That's meditation, right. Kundalini, the energy of a female.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The snake energy.
Yes. So
it's the energy that comes from the spine.
The spine from
exactly.
Here,
from the,
right? From the spine, from the mid.
From the base of our being.
Yes, correct. So that's your inspiration? Or
yes.
Is that part of the inspiration for this Kundalini Project?
It's I will say that is I started when I was like around 14.
Okay.
And I started to become very connected with spirituality, mm-hmm. and self-growth since I was really young. I was walking from school to my house, and I saw on a poster Kundalini yoga course, and so I looked at it and I said, wow, there is something there. And I went home and I said to mom, I want to go. And remember, she took me there, and when I went there, I was the only young, you know, boy there, and everyone else was super like adults basically. Yeah. So was a very cool initiation for me, because I discovered how much is important to connect just with our bodies, with ourselves,
and everything else, and the universe,
the earth,
the sun, the music.
Exactly.
The tea, music, coffee.
The coffee.
Exactly.
The Palo Santo.
Let's burn some Palo
Santo. Awesome. Love it.
Yeah. So this is a great way to somehow bring the space into a sacred space.
Okay.
You know, so we also in Aboriginal culture they use,
yes, of course,
a mushroom.
Yeah,
it's called the grandfather, and basically they think that the smoke is the spirit. So the spirit is the most ancient ancestor of us.
Of course,
and when we burn something before we are going into a significant place, so a sacred place, we are prepared for it. So that's why I carry this Palo Santo everywhere.
So you're prepared all the time?
Not all the time. But I have my Palo Santo all the time. If you will be somewhere and you'll smell some Palo Santo, probably I'm there.
You know, my guitar's made from Palo Santo too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't light them up like that though. otherwise, I won't have a guitar.
It's made like Palo Santo.
I've got Palo Santo on my guitar. Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Mm. Yeah, they don't do it anymore. But
we should do some music with that.
Of course. That's why I'm very spiritual as well. When I'm playing music, and my music is spiritual as well.
Yeah. Music is such a powerful tool to bring us.
Sometimes too powerful. And I think it doesn't matter what music it is, it attracts things, right? It starts your vibrations, those frequencies, those vibrations, it comes in. And this is where there's that thing when you hear something, sometimes you hear a song or something and it brings you to a different place, like nostalgia, or takes you back to somewhere, reminds you of something, brings you back. It makes you feel either good or doesn't make you feel too good.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
That's the power of music.
Definitely. Music also, you know that they changed the frequency of music, actually.
Yeah.
From the 1950s.
Yeah. I've heard this, yes.
Yes.
They changed
the frequency. They changed it to 440.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know
so there is a purpose on that, I think. You know, I'm not, I'm not someone that thinks that everything is doing on
purpose. You're not a conspiracy theorist.
Exactly. I'm not, but
I'm a little bit.
I'm a little bit too, especially with the latest events that were happening.
I agree.
You know?
There's a bit in all of us.
There's a bit in all of us, yeah. But you're right about the frequencies. Yeah, they've changed.
They changed it. And you actually, if you're doing a cymatic test, which is a test on the water or in a surface that it can be changed by frequency, you can see clearly that with the 440, the frequency does create a kind of a non-geometrical shape.
Yeah.
But with the 443, it does. So there is something there to look at.
And on that, the thing with that is, though, you're not always playing at 440, even if you're playing a musical instrument. It changes.
Yeah.
So you're not always on 440.
Yeah.
So this is why it messes with your emotions and it messes with your frequencies, right? Because it's always changing. And sometimes we do drop tuning and we tune different things.
Or
and
even this is fretless why, instruments too.
Yeah.
You can't specifically hit the 440 on. Exactly. It's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's really
very fascinating. It's very fascinating. You're spot on there. When you're playing, especially with drop tuning, that's why sometimes drop tunings, they sound deep and they sound really good.
Yeah.
You think, this is something I can work with. This is like, you know. And,
you feel
and
it in your body.
You feel it in your body. Yeah. You can, you know, in the kundalini.
We talk about the base chakra here.
Yeah, I know.
Which is the
root chakra. You should have a chat with my wife.
Yeah. I can't wait, actually. Yeah.
So, you've been halfway across the globe.
Yeah.
Italy, India, Germany, Switzerland, Austria.
Yeah.
Why Australia? You've come to Australia. Why Australia?
Oh, well, you know, it was time of my life where I was, I wanted a big shift in my life. I was going through a big change, you know, and I decided just to really, I like risk. You know, so I like to risk and I just like to, I think life is one, you know, so life should be taken as a way to test yourself, to change, to grow, to go challenges without like,
so true.
You know, because then we at the end of the day, all these experiences, they really make understand a lot of things and becomes knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, Australia was one of those things that I with my partner at the time, we decided just to, let's go for 1 year. And then we stayed here for 8 years, you know, and it's such a beautiful country, beautiful place to be. And there is a lot of culture.
A lot of culture. And there's a lot of sacred places in Australia that we still don't know about, right?
So, yeah.
But definitely. it's Australia's different from everywhere.
From
like you
everywhere.
Go to Europe, you know, Europe is Europe. I've been to Europe many times.
Oh, nice.
Different. It's a different thing. Wherever you go to Europe, there's similarities, right? History, architecture, and everything like that.
Yeah.
Australia being so young.
Yeah.
It's very young country.
It's very young, but it's absorbed so many cultures. You know, it's absorbed so many cultures, and you see like cultures that you wouldn't see anywhere else, I don't think, in the world.
Yeah. It's very fragmented though. At the same time, I think that, you know, you can find all these cultures, but I'm not sure if sometimes there are two. You know, sometimes I feel they are too apart to each other and they should come more closer. When it comes to events, that's clearly that there is a cohesion.
Mm.
But I'm talking about like actual human shared experience. Of course, I have friends, many friends from different backgrounds and all of that. But I think, you know, somehow I see Australia kind of the new Babylon.
Ah.
You know?
What a way to have a think about it. The new Babylon.
So, you know, there is a shared language which everyone speaks.
There you go. But,
I won't say anything.
Why not?
Because I've got the how you going accent.
That's all right. How you going? No, we all have.
How you going?
Oh, I've probably got it. It's more. Mine's
less
more,
noticeable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm
less noticeable.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long you've been here?
I've been born here.
Are you born here?
Yeah, I'm born here. But
I got your accent still.
Yeah, of
your,
look,
you're beautiful Macedonian.
Yeah, I still got the accent. Reason being is I grew up speaking just Macedonian at home, right? And now with my wife, she's imported. I met her overseas, and we talk Macedonian at home. The kids talk Macedonian as well, but
Beautiful. You know,
like, I speak a little bit of Spanish and a little bit of, you know, Serbian and everything like that, but sometimes I get confused and people say I have an accent, but I probably do, but I don't know. I get confused sometimes in my head. How should I say this word? Am I speaking English or am I speaking Macedonia or am I speaking God knows what, you know? But that's Australia. That's multiculturalism, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's different from interculturalism. You see, there is a difference between multiculturalism and interculturalism. Multiculturalism does have culture sharing a space, but interculturalism is actually even more deeper when actually those cultures are really collaborative to each other, which is happening here. But I think still, I feel that, of course, like everything, it could be implemented. I'm not talking about the superficiality of things. I'm talking more in a deeper, in a deeper way. I see that there is still kind of awareness to bring into the table when it comes to share with others, you know.
Interesting that you should say that, because I think that is, it's like that in Europe. Because in Europe, I don't think they're still that aware. They still don't have that share. I think the last time on, everyone was very much for themselves and very, very, how can I put it? Not selfish, but it was like they're really watching out for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, in that part of the world. Whereas here, we still got that, you know, we still got that trust in between people.
Yeah.
You know, we've, like being born here, we grew up in a great time, you know. Like everything was free, everything was, you know, you go out and you talk to people, and you didn't have fear.
Yeah, it's fear.
Whereas overseas, I think they've got more fear now. From people that I know that I talk to in Europe,
it depends which place. Which
it probably
parts,
depends.
You know?
You're probably right. But yeah. I think from a general thing, I think we're still here. We're still very open as people here. You know? We're not closed. Whereas in Europe, they're a bit closed. They're a bit.
I would say in long term, I would say, okay, let's put it like this. I give you an analogy. I think when you meet someone in Europe, at first, it's difficult to get a relationship, to enter into a connection or a relationship, even a friendship, you know, whatever it is, because there is a little bit of hesitancy and mistrust. But if you are wanting to go deep and to establish a longer relationship, I think in Europe that becomes really solid.
That's genuine.
Yeah, when it's here, there is already the openness and the trust from the beginning.
Interesting.
But maybe it's easier as well that friendship or that connection falls apart quickly. That's what I noticed. Sorry, guys.
Straightforward. That's good. That's your view. And that's a pretty good view. I can
relate to that view. I'm noticing it, I don't want to say a bit more, but yeah, a little bit more in Australia. But then I haven't been to Europe, so I don't have that, that comparison between the two. But again, I feel I think we are open in that sense that in Australia we're open to new ideas and new concepts of people. It's more I think there's a few trust issues within. I mean, I was born here and I still have some trust issues, so myself included.
You've had some personal experiences as well.
I mean, and that can colour how we all.
Of course.
I mean, we're talking as a collective here, but then I don't know if we can even talk as a collective because we haven't met. There's so many people here.
All right. So a question for both of you. How would you put that into the music community here in Australia? How would you how would you, is it the same within the musicians? Is it the same within the artists here in Australia? Is it completely different? Is it a completely different world? What do you guys think?
Do you want to respond first?
Yeah. Also in terms of openness.
Yeah, openness. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good openness, question.
Kindness, I suppose.
Yeah.
Selfishness. Egos.
Yeah.
We've all either. You like it?
It's amazing. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you. What's your word?
Anissa.
Thank you, Anissa. Amazing to you.
It's a good, very good question.
We've all had the ego at some point, and it's a natural part of.
There's a healthy,
there's a healthy ego and there's a
healthy amount required. I think perhaps I could. I don't want. Now I sound like egotistical by saying this. I think I need a little bit more ego. But as I say that, I'm like, oh, why did I say that? No, but in the music world, I feel, again, there's so many different musicians. I'm just finding that I'm meeting so many different musicians.
Mm.
But I am noticing that there is a bit of selfishness there. Like, I mean, this is my experience. It may not relate to everyone else. There are a mix. So there are a small group of musicians that I really connect with and feel like that I trust them, and we collaborate and we support each other, go to each other's gigs and all of that thing. And I feel like I could trust them with just things I'm saying and even receiving feedback from them. They're also very open and caring. But then I've also met a few other musicians who I've collaborated with or just done a one-off gig with them. And it's almost, again, it could just be I don't know them that well, but it's almost a standoff, slightly feeling threatened, or like a combination of either feeling threatened or kind of like, why are you in my territory?
I relate to that. You're sort of there, just go do the job and go home.
Becomes that, and you don't feel that it's the right vibe to stay there. And
I've had that too in the past, and when the energy is like that, you don't feel like playing, you don't play good, you don't you just go there, do the job and go home.
Look, I feel that here we are talking about so many different layers.
Yeah, so many.
Because, for instance, where we are in the city of Melbourne has been for many years the live city in the world, like one of the best ones. But then if you're looking better with magnifying glasses, it's like, and you really analyze. First of all, I'm very grateful because all of us, we are coming with very different background when it comes to musical experience, what we do, and still we are here sharing, which is an example of us meeting together sharing.
Yeah.
But as I come back to the magnifying glass, I think that you see clearly that perhaps when it comes to the surface of things, and it seems like that there is a lot of out there. There is a lot of events and there is a lot of programming and all of that. But when you look at the industry, the music industry in terms of like record labels or how actually the music industry in working itself, I think that is so-so in Australia. I don't think that is a place where, like US, for instance, or other places in Europe, like France or England or Germany, they have a very powerful, they have a lot of money as well to invest in, to experiment.
Mm.
Because I find that sometimes, especially with projects that are quite experimental, I'm talking about the mainstream. I'm not talking about just the independent ones. Here, there are more like, I'm not sure if I can invest all this amount of money.
They're not risk takers.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think it's all about then, of course, who we are in touch with. And that's, we are coming back. Relationships are the new currency. And trust.
They've always been a currency though.
Yeah, it's true.
They've always been the currency. It's just that I think now, in the last probably 2-3 years, I think that currency of relationships is actually getting stronger.
Stronger, yeah.
because I think a lot of people are getting more and more aware, and I think a lot of people are thinking that, you know what, I think times are changing. We need to change as well, and we need to respect others, first of all, and do things that we really want to do and that we really love. Like us musicians, we want to play music, right?
Yeah.
And we want to play music. So. Yeah, that's right. But we don't only play music like to play music. We actually play music to actually make other people feel good as well, so they can absorb that energy as well. When I'm performing for them. When I'm working at home and I'm producing things, for the people who are going to listen to it, whoever they are, you know. That's very important. And I think that the awareness now is getting a bit bigger. And now there's a lot more artists, you know. There's a lot more in enablement as for technology.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
Right, technology. People that are...
There are no excuses.
Yeah, there are no excuses. And there are some younger people now that have a different outlook on the music industry. They're putting other things in. You know, like years ago, it used to be like this hierarchy of, you know, the industry. These people here, you have to ask them, or you have to go through that company to do something. It's not like that anymore. Now you've got the opportunity to actually go out and do music yourself, you know. And there are pros and cons with that and platforms and stuff like that, but you have got the chance and the ability to do things yourself if you really are passionate about it and you know what you're doing. That's, I think, that would have been this would have been much harder 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that is always kind of, there is always a side of the coin. Like, for instance, I born in the, in, you know, where tapes and same. CDs, you know, where, you know, there. And I think that in that time, going into a store and you were very selective and also very intentional about the way of consuming music.
Mm. So true.
And now we are in an age where every day there are thousands of records coming out. Every day.
Flooded. It's, you know, flooded.
So that's the thing, how you can find a way to become somehow seen and being perceived by you know, the audience that you are targeting. That perhaps are listening to other artists, similar artists too. And be also somehow bold into that, you know. And I think that we are in a very important age where there are no excuses, because we have everything. We have so much access to tools like in our phones to create content, to reach people. But you know, it's also the flip side of it is that then becomes like, you know, sometimes you become very dependent on social media, on the algorithm, on all of these tools I question sometimes if they're really...
I totally agree. Yeah. And I don't know about you guys, but me, when I get into that thing and I forget to actually play music, I forget to produce.
Yeah.
I forget to actually go back and rehearse what I need to rehearse, because you're on that. You need to... do content, you need to do this, and it's like, what do I do first?
You're your own PR, and I'm actually at the point now where I'm thinking to pay someone to do it for me, because I feel like my eyes are becoming glazed over from all the screen.
Yeah,
I was thinking the same today too.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that for a long time, but finances.
It's all about finances.
Yeah. It's all about finances. How much do I make from music, and then how much do you invest, and how much do... And that's another question.
Right? And you know what? And this is also impacting the event industry, because somehow now the places and the events, venues, they not just want the music as a, you know, value for them to create social cohesion, social, you know, connection to, of course, get revenues. But they want also to know how many people you're going to bring in order for you to play there. So now it's kind of somehow a labyrinth where you have to provide everything.
But it's been like that for the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I understand that you know, we are in a capitalistic society, and we have to somehow rely on the value of money. But what is the value of the music? The music is a sacred tool that, you know, us as a musician and you guys, because I'm a producer, you know, I'm not really a musician like you guys.
You got your native flutes.
That's another conversation maybe that we can explore a bit later on what I'm actually doing. But I want to just bring the awareness on the fact that really we are in a society where they have to understand the value of the artist and the musician as a connection with the highest, the superior, the God, because that's what was in the ancient time. The musician was perceived as the connection between the earth and the sky. And so, you know, it would be amazing if we still we can, as a human beings, perceive the art form as this deep connection between us in that we are in earth to something higher, that the energy of the universe. So then there is more reverence, there is more respect for those. And it's also changing, you know, a little bit the form where you see things that are not just, you know, numbers, you know, it's not just about what do you do? And
people and the quality. Keep, it's and, not about the quality.
It's not about the quality.
It's about the quantity. It's about the amount. How many people you're gonna get? How many people follow you?
Exactly.
What's your YouTube channel like? Oh,
it's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
You see, you are doing a podcast, which is amazing. Congratulations,
thanks.
I really appreciate as well that you bring me here. But at the same time, you see, you are doing a podcast because you want also to somehow share with people what is your music experience with other musicians, right? And perhaps, maybe I would say 6-7 years ago, 10 years ago, you would not even think about
it. No, not at all. Six, 7 years ago, I was thinking about being a rock star, but that didn't happen.
Be city limited, you know, Melbourne.
Yeah. But look, you're right. And on the podcast, and this is the whole point of this podcast, is like people like us, like all three of us, people who are musicians, people who really value other musicians' time and advice and information and playing and everything like that. It has to go somewhere, right? So this podcast is the perfect place for that to happen, because maybe one day, you know, it'll help them. Somehow, you know, the podcast will help people. Even however it might be, even if it's just a chat or if it's an interview or if it's, you know, them getting more work out of it. This podcast, I created this podcast, and now I'm very thankful that Amla's come on board. And we're doing this to actually help the musicians and help the industry as much as we can with what we have. With what we have, we don't have much. But you know what? The freedom of speech is here.
Yeah, true. Somehow now the communication has become a primal and essential tool for musicians to spread their own, brand.
Yeah.
Also their own brand.
Yeah. And that's before you even start playing. This is before you even start recording. This is before you even start thinking about that. What's my brand? What am I going to do? How do I? It's like, I have to you have to schedule things. It's like a musician to schedule is very hard. Like a lot of musicians aren't used to being scheduling, but you know what? I've got used to it somehow, like scheduling this, and now it works. It works, but it also, if you're going to do a schedule, you need to really follow the time of the schedule. Sometimes the schedule goes out the window because you're there rehearsing or whatever you're recording, and you can't just stop after an hour and just
I can see clearly this because I, as a Kundalini project, I have my own record label, which is called Sacred Vision Records.
Fantastic. fantastic.
And I plan to release my own music and also other people music. Also, I'm like,
yeah, part of my label. Yeah, that's right.
And
I listen to Deja Vu.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I like it.
Oh, thank you.
To last night, I listened to it before you guys came. I had on full blast. Yeah, it was like I had my own. little Kundalini project here.
and also, you know, I run an event organization which is called the Magic Garden Festival. So I in there we run three different events.
Okay.
So there is a lot of going on.
Yeah.
Good on you. That's a lot of effort. A lot of energy, a lot of effort. Good on you.
And more than before, I'm really understanding how much is important as well to partner with the right people.
Yes.
So important.
And to really being able to select as well the right people you work with.
Yeah.
And also give trust to other people when you are able to, you know, you know that person, that people that you're around, you can trust. You delegate.
Yeah, because you can't do everything yourself.
No.
I've been in that boat for a very long time. I think I'm going to do everything myself. You get run down.
Yeah.
Burn out. And you think I'm going to give everything up, you know, at some point. I can't do this for all the work that I'm doing, for everything that I'm doing myself, and for the return that I'm getting. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Also, it's about scaling. If you want to scale something,
yeah, of course.
You will have to have, you know, people that help you to scale. And it's very important about the intention as well that everyone brings in, and if it's a shared vision, you know. So I think a shared vision is the most important thing when even yourself as an artist, you're going into the world and you want to spread the music. You know, what is your vision? You know, it can be something crazy, but if it's your vision, you should just go out there and spread it. For instance, you know, we are running more conscious events, which I explain what it is. So for conscious, I mean that instead of like, you know, the music that I play, usually you can listen into club, into festivals, doofs, and stuff like that. And what we did instead is like creating a space where there's no alcohol, no drugs involved, and people, they can really express themselves through dance.
Yep.
In a very, you know, free way. Also, if you can come to one event, you will see that people are really not giving a shit about how people perceive them. They just go with it.
I've been to a few. How good is that? The event.
You don't feel like you have to look like this. You have to do this, or you have to say this. Or you have to do. That's a real. It's a breath of fresh air these days.
Yeah, exactly.
They make you, I guess, like you said, no alcohol, no drugs. It's just like, there's not that pressure to be in a club and go, oh, everyone else is having a drink. Or as us musicians, or even as a music producer, you go to an event or you perform and it's in a bar.
Yeah.
And then they give you a free drinks tab, you know. So I like that these events don't have that pressure.
I think it's great. So a question for you.
Yeah.
When you organize these events, when you have the idea, I want to do this event.
Yeah.
It's in my head.
Yeah.
What's the first thing you do?
First of all, is the name.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, of course, the vision is the most important. So,
you have the vision, you know what you want.
For instance, the Magic Garden. The Magic Garden, when I created the Magic Garden, was the venue was into a beautiful beer garden. That is one of the events that is kind of in the middle between a conscious event and no conscious event. So people comes in and they have the option. So it's like kind of a transition between clubbing and conscious
event. You're trying to convert them.
Yeah. It sounds like
it's not a conscious event. It's a conversion event.
It sounds like, but I look at the venue and I thought, wow, how I can make this event like You know, I want that people think when they see the name, they think something that when they arrive into the space is actually happen, is there, and it's like a wow experience. Yeah, yeah. You know?
So your name, you envisage to the venue. So you get the name and then you look for the venue.
Yeah, or the opposite. I know the venue because sometimes, you know, you can maybe make a crazy name because maybe you can't find for instance, you know, I think it's more realistic to look at the venue first and understand the potential of the space and then come with the idea. And that's actually what happened with the Magic Garden. And then, for instance, Sound Safari, which we are running with Dan Semantic Harmony, which is an amazing sound journey facilitator. We do it in different venues, but because we have the decorations with us, we make it very cohesive. So every time, even though we have different venues, because we run one event down in the Mornington Peninsula and one here in Melbourne. So we always try to have a very similar.
You put your stamp on it. You know, it's
your branding, it's, essentially.
Yeah.
In a way.
Oh, that's great.
So we have a lot of like flowers and plants and mushrooms.
They're not magic, but
lights. No, the magic. We wish.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
We're going to go back a little bit into the music.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
So in terms of the music you create, I've known you for quite a few years. It's evolved so much continues changing.
Thankfully to you as well. Amla's been a great impact in my life when it comes to especially the connection with real instruments. You are an amazing talent.
Thank you.
Amla's an amazing artist. And I'm an amazing person.
Exactly. Amazing person, amazing artist, an amazing talent. And, you know, I think that since somehow our paths are being crossing, I started to value even more the organic feel of an instrument and understand more the value of what it means. Also, like playing live, you know, like without being fixed on the arrangement on the screen, but just, you know, looping and stuff like that. So I think that has been also like a shift, understanding that realm of like more organic instruments and also like connecting. I think I've been connecting with myself differently. Maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, my music was more, I think that I was, my ego was more driven. I was more in my ego. And
how would you describe your music back then?
I think it was part of my growth. Yeah. I'm not actually saying that music is bad. The music was good. But if I look myself now and what I'm doing, I think that it resonates more with my values.
Yeah.
How I look the world and how I see it. And I think that, you know, we are going through, I went through that period of time where I think that I wanted to deliver just music that was just working and for a dance floor or for a festival. But then I understood that it wasn't really completely resonating with myself as a person.
I remember you actually, when we were like doing, we did some collaborations in the past, and I remember you thinking about taking a break from it, but then you realized that your style was changing and it was evolving.
Yeah,
I'm glad you didn't take a break from it.
Well, need to. I
mean, sometimes it's good to have a break. Yeah.
I took 5 years break in Australia. So when I was in Italy, I'm producing since the early 2000s. So it's 23 years that I make music. And when I came to Australia, my focus was on films. So because I'm also a cinematographer.
Bloody cool. Good one.
And yeah, good. So I focused on the art of filmmaking as well, because I think that sometimes really changing career and understand other things is good because it's giving you a different perspective about, and also make you miss somehow what you know, I needed to miss the music making because I'm telling you, for every producer out there, being, I know how much is the pain, or even who is recording 10 hours, 15 hours a day on your computer recording. And you know, that's something that, you know, sometimes you really need to have a break.
What was your inspiration for getting into music and creating, producing your music? Like, what age were you, and like, what inspired you to get into that world?
I was inspired mainly when I started, mainly by status, I think.
Status.
Because like when I was in a small town, you know,
you wanted to be popular.
Exactly.
You wanted to be this big thing, DJ, massive.
Exactly.
Festival, the only one there.
Headliner.
The first music that I started to produce, it wasn't actually anything to do with dance. It was hip hop.
Oh, really?
Okay.
So I started as a rapper.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was making...
Did you rap in Italian?
I was rapping in Italian.
Oh, awesome.
and I was completely, you know, I was like, wow, I want to get all these girls in my town.
I think we all went through that at one stage when we were young.
You know, so if I have a microphone and say some good things, you know,
microphone in one hand and a pad in the other so you can write down the phone numbers. Just put your number here.
Like more information on
you know it project. Works you know it works
leave your subscribe
and Bakundalini project went when after so I had a band a hip-hop band in that time was called Confusione Pubblica, which means public confusion. So it was really political, really. I was in that time also, I was like somehow relating as a using music for a political, you know, communication.
Yeah, statements.
Yeah, exactly. So we were doing the music for that. And then, you know, as I said, to attract the...
That's how it started.
The
reality of things is like that. And then one day I was on a bus and my friend from my school going back home, and he had something playing in... and was like, what is this music? And it was like a dancing path music, you know? So I could... Listen, there was like kind of a psychedelic or something weird.
Mm.
And I asked him and I put the headphones on. I was like, wow, this music is amazing. It was like psychedelic trance.
Trance, yeah. That's
You like it too.
I know. But yeah,
it's good to know that you like that.
You know, that came out like years and years ago. Like it came out in Europe before it came here. But when it came out here, it was quite an underground thing. It was not a lot of people were like listening to it. And then back in the 90s, I think, that's a lot of the raves started happening here in Melbourne.
Ah, yeah, you see.
The warehouses. Yeah. And then they started going out in the farms and stuff. And, but it was trance. It wasn't psychedelic trance at that stage. It was like, and then they were sort of like, you know, it was getting bit of this, that. And then a lot of like records and music started coming in from Europe.
Yeah.
And that's when that all happened. The late 90s and 2000s here.
Yeah.
That's when the raves started hitting.
So, yeah, exactly. You know? So that was the time when I was starting to go with my friends and, you know, in Bush.
In the bush. That's where it all happened.
And, you know, and started to understand also like the rave culture, which, you know, for I honor a lot that because you understand a lot of about, you know, how the word is out there, the people out there and so many different kind of people and how you also somehow relate to these people
or you
connect with the people and was a really free form as well of Even though, you know, a lot of drugs were involved there. Yeah. And
I think it came with the environment.
Yeah.
I think it came in with the environment. And that was something that was, it was what they call part and parcel. If you went to a rave, chances are you need to take something. That's how it was, you know?
Yeah. But the first maybe five or six I was doing as well. I was taking some drugs, but I realized myself that, you know, I have actually a few friends that unfortunately they didn't ended up really well. So I kind of somehow
understood. You saw the light.
That, no, this is not where I want to be, where I want to go. And I started to just, you know, if it was like a joint here and there, I would smoke.
Oh, look, that's not, a lot of people do joints and whatever. That's not, it's just going down.
What is your view about the legalization, slowly legalization?
Look, I've never taken drugs, but I'm all for, you know, if it helps people medically, sure. You know, if marijuana helps people, if marijuana and CBD oil, whatever, I'm all for it. If it helps people, because I've heard that it helps people with a lot of complications and it helps them live a better life. So whatever makes you happy and whatever makes you live a better life, but I think too much of anything is not a good thing.
Perfect.
Whether you have drugs, whether you have, you know,
wine
whether you have... Sometimes music, too much music. Sometimes, you know, over floods.
It's
true.
You don't want to over finesse the flow.
Yeah, over finesse the flow. You had to throw that in. But another question, and this is more of a technical question, and in regards to your producing, your sound. When I hear your sound, it's very deep. It's very subsonic. It's very thick. It's very it's like it's hovering. Like everything else is hovering on something, you know. How do you get that? How do you produce that? How do you what do you do to get that sound? Because in everything that you, because I've listened to your tracks from, I think from 2012 all up until this year.
Yeah.
There's that one common denominator where things are, they sound nice and thick.
Wow! Thank you.
So, in your producing, how do you use that? Is there a formula, or do you just listen? Is it the way you feel, when you're producing, when you're doing that technical stuff, when you're going through mix down and mastering, and how do you?
I think it's what you mentioned is play a very important role. I think that I understood somehow the formula for myself is always, you know, keep a very good balance. So, for instance, you know, I do all my mixes. I have a threshold of -6 dB.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, I start to work with that threshold in order to get all my levels. And then, you know, like really understand the low end and don't try to mud too much.
Yeah.
That frequency.
Because that can get muddy.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and it's there's an art form to that too. So
yeah,
to try and have everything really distinct and defined.
Yeah.
And that can be quite hard sometimes.
Yeah. Mixed down. You know, I think that especially bass music, which is different from the music that I'm doing, I'm talking about more dubstep. That music, if you are not really good at understanding the bass line, so understanding how also make space between drums and bass, you eventually will not have a good mix or end product. So I think that I having understood really well how that type of music is working, it made everything so easy for myself when it comes to especially the low end. I think I still struggle, for instance, to have a mid high range, a little bit of more defined. But I think it's also about like the my studio is not treated, you know, so I don't.
Mine isn't either. So
I would like to have a treated studio, but I tell you, most of my records has been always mixed in places that are not treated. So I don't think that having a treated studio change the way, but of course it helps.
Of course,
you know, and now I experiment as well a little bit more with clipping. So I want to clip the signal. So I intentionally.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. And then of course you will have to, degrade kind of your signal, put down your signal for streaming services.
I get you.
When it comes to the dance floor, I mean, there are no really.
You're there. In front of the console, anyway. So if you need to modify things, you're right there, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't play. I don't play with a console. So my.
No, I'm saying like console as in your instrument.
Instrument, yeah.
Right. That's what I mean by not a DJ console, but your console. Whether it's your instruments, whether you have your mixes there, or whether you have your synths, or whether you have any other. That's your.
Exactly. Your console. Yeah, you can have somehow. You know, if I play live. Mm. I know that I want my tracks all to be at the same level, so there is not like a huge discrepancy between them. But
I think you've got, for you, I think it's good because you've got the ability to actually play with your levels and everything because you're there in front and you're there by yourself. For me, it's a bit hard because I've got 5-6 different people on stage and, you know, and I can't really, while I'm playing, I can't really see levels and do levels. I've got to have the sound guy look for me.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that's the advantage of, I think, of your project as well, because you're right there, you know what you want and you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And you're going to, if I want to reduce it here, I'll reduce it here. If you, you know, this, that's
still,
the whole
point. Still, you know, I face the problem of the location, you know, because the
acoustics and everything.
The acoustics in places sometimes are, you know, I don't like, for instance, rooms that are too reverby. Too much echo.
It doesn't work. It's a challenge, isn't it?
Also, I feel that it makes people more tired of the music.
Yeah, actually, you know, point.
Like really.
Yeah,
if you are in a dead space, people they will be more focused and there will be less damage in their ears. Mm. When there is a room that there is too much reverb and echo. Of course, I'm talking about music that is amplified. I'm not talking about choir or violin, because that's not the case.
Yes.
But when it's amplified in a space, it kind of tires the ears.
Yeah, you got a point, actually. You have got a point. It actually tires the artist as well sometimes.
Yeah.
You're fighting, and the sound can also disappear. Yeah, not only is it, and then it's you get the muddy effect as well.
Every time when I look in a location, when I have to do an event, first thing, I'm clapping my hands.
Yeah, same.
You know?
Same. Same. But that's your thing in the wind, isn't it? It's like you're monitoring.
Yeah.
It's like,
somehow, yeah. Of course, then sometimes the location I have, like we have an event in a place called St. Bridget Hall in North Fitzroy, which is a church.
Mm.
Beautiful location, amazing. When it comes to the fact of decorating it, making it nice, but unfortunately, you really need a big sound system to fill it up, because it's all about filling the room with frequency, you know. But you don't want, of course, have like too much loudness, because as well.
Do you think it's a point of amplification, or do you think it's just a point of, for example, the acoustics within? The actual venue itself, like putting in rugs or putting this or putting up panels instead of pushing more amplification, just putting in some panels or putting in some rugs here or there, and maybe that's
you know, rugs.
It's just an example. I'm thinking about a drummer, it's just an example, whether they're panels or whether they're curtains somewhere, you know.
Yeah, you know, in Melbourne, I have to say there are few venues that they have their acoustic completely on point.
Mm.
I don't think, even because before actually, Valentino, I was involved in a, I was booking people in a venue that was just acoustic.
Acoustic bands.
So I know really well that I was also going in other venues and, you know, somehow
analyzing.
Mm. And I don't think that there is a venue with that it's their own venue. It's not, I'm not talking about a stadium or wherever they hosting mainstream artists.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about just generally venues they don't have a sound, great sound acoustic.
No, because the venue owners don't actually go towards that. The venue owners go towards how many people can we fit in here.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they won't update their sound system, little things like that.
Yeah, and that's why you need to like around your own sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a challenge. Mm-hmm. Another question.
Yeah.
You and Amla have recorded a couple of tracks.
Yeah.
And
we will do more.
Yeah. I was listening to Deja Vu just before. It's balanced in the flutes, balancing so nice. Like I know I you expect to be electronic, but then you hear the flute and you got vocals in there as well, I think.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a transition in there as well, you know?
Yes, there is. Yes.
So that's intentional, I think. Yeah. So there's that, you know?
Ah, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So
everything's the music I produce does have an intention when it comes to the arrangement, you know? So that track that you're talking about is a down tempo track, which is, it's not like a full dance. It is, 110 BPM.
Yep.
So it's not like a full on track. Amla is there, also Solana, which is singing. And when I approach, and this is the experience that I shared also in other tracks with Amla, because we have also Gypsy.
That one too.
We have Gypsy.
I like that one as well.
Yeah. So when we started to collaborate, I really wanted that from the beginning, the instruments are somehow highlighted and there is not too much. Of course, reverb is there, you know, there is a little bit of...
A bit of effects, bit of phasing or whatever. Exactly,
but it's not taking out the nature of the instrument.
That's very important.
That's very important.
You can
that's
still tell important. It's the actual instrument you're playing.
Yeah.
And that's important to the artist because as an artist, like, don't get me wrong, for me, I like experimentation. And, you know, if it comes out really well and it's tweaking and you're doing some effects with the flute or guitar or whatever it is, and that's expected, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you got to give it justice. However you do, you want to give the instrument justice and the artist a bit of justice as well. You don't want to sort of like do the opposite because then it's a bit disappointing, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what you need to feature. You need that taste.
Also because Amla is featured in that track. So, you know, like I see how much is important as well from her point of view to be included into the music. Now she's becoming like a more established, you are a quite established artist.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you think
so. No, I mean,
of course
you
are.
You know, you're becoming like more, it's more even refined in your sound. You understand more where is your direction and
I'm
everything.
Growing confidence.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Learning new skills.
Very important.
Yeah.
So
very important. Helps. Yeah.
I wanted just to honor. It's important when you work with other people that you honor.
Yes.
Their work.
So true. I agree. Completely agree. Now you said you were a cinematographer.
Yeah.
I saw those little clips on Spotify as well with the video coming down.
Yeah.
They're great.
Really cool.
Thank you.
It's you, yeah? No one else?
No. I do everything myself.
Yeah, sounds familiar. Sounds familiar. Nah, well done. I mean, from end to end, you know, you produce everything and...
And that's why, guys, you see Bruce Alex Gill. Because Alex is my name where everyone calls me. But Bruce Gill is my name as a cinematographer and director.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't want to ask you just in case it wasn't allowed.
No. I want to actually disclose it because sometimes people, they Bruce Gill is like kind of a brand that is specifically on video.
Okay. Awesome. Well, look, I think we might call it there, Alex.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much. I think we're going to have you on again later on.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's because I think there's more and more information. There's more
so
stories
to
tell.
There's so much information. I feel like you've just opened up a big
can of worms and we've only got the surface, you know. But thanks so much. Do you want to plug anything or do you have any gigs, any shows, any festivals?
I will be... Well, a good news is that I will be at Esoteric Festival 2024, which is a really good festival to be in. I have a few festivals coming up now and then. The Magic Garden Festival, follow the Magic Garden Festival, which we'll have a lot of links as well. Events. And I really hope that also you, Valentino, can come somehow and see what we do. And
well, maybe we can all collaborate.
Yeah. I would love to do a track with you guys.
We'll all just collaborate.
I would love to do it.
Yeah. Well, we've got the tools.
We've got the tools.
We've got the knowledge.
Yes,
and we've got the people. So that's the combination, perfect combination.
You see how beautiful is this? I'm so excited. I can't wait. So you will hear a flamenco song, a flamenco sound with
infusion.
Wow.
Infusion.
Can't wait.
Yeah,
that's
that
what we call
cool.
it. Infusions.
Infusions.
Yeah.
And what was the date of your gig?
The date.
The date. Okay, so next gig is the 6th of August. In Mornington Peninsula, you can find all the infos at Instagram Kundalini Project, Facebook Kundalini Project as well.
We'll put the links up all up.
Exactly.
On the well.
And you will find everything there. And thank you again for the amazing chat.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming. We're going to get you on again, definitely, because this is not enough.
So much more to know.
Yeah.
So much more.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Amla, thank you as well.
Thank you, Amla.
Thanks, guys. Till next time. Ciao.
Valentinoflamenco.com and amlamusic.com.